Have you ever been a part of this before?
No.
This is great. It's a great. They run top notch.
Now it's.
Josh, you good? Jasmine, we're started. All right, here we go in 3, 2, 1. What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, Eye Injuries from Sports with Dr. Pham, number 188. This week, our guest is Dr. Pham. She is with the Houston Retina Associates. She is my ophthalmologist. I went to see her when I had a problem. I had, it looked like bugs flying every time I looked left or right. And I was like, man, what's going on? So my wife said, here, call the doctor. And then the optometrist called and said, hey, you need to go see a specialist. So then they sent me to Dr. Pham, and then Dr. Pham took care of me. About 2-3 weeks later, I was more or less all good to go, and I haven't had a problem with it since. So, you know, throughout the course of the several different visits, we had several conversations. And one of the things she used to do was work right outside of a sports arena or sports clinic. And so she saw lots of soccer injuries and stuff like that. And so I was like, well, that'd be a perfect person to talk to. Got expertise. So we have Dr. Pham here joining us as we're talking about eye injuries. Of course, I am your host, Jeremy Jackson. Sitting right beside me, we got
Juanita.
Joshua.
Jasmine.
Cooper.
Tiana.
We have Dr. Yellen joining us.
And hello. Good Dr. Pham. See you again.
We have lots of other students, Daniela, Mariana, and Jasmine taking notes. We have Yvette over on Twitter. Nelly is using the hashtag. Nick is on cameras, and Ariana is controlling the PowerPoint. So this is the first time we're going to be having a PowerPoint presentation. Dr. Pham's got some slides there, so Jasmine should be showing those on the live stream. I'll also have that linked in the show notes. I'll have that presentation there available for you to see if you're downloading and listening to this later. Again, if you want to join the conversation, like I said, Nelly is on hashtag TheSMB on Twitter. So without much further ado, Jasmine, let's go ahead and flip over to the presentation, and we will get to Dr. Pham.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for having me today. It's an honor to be here. My name is Shapa Pham. I'm one of the retina doctors over at Houston Retina Associates. And like Jeremy said, that he was my doctor, or he was my patient. I was his doctor.
moving up in the world.
A while back. So here, first, a little bit about my practice is I'm with a practice that has 5 doctors, and it's John Allopat, Michael Lamb, myself, Usha Panenti, and Dr. Lee Tran. And we have 5 different locations throughout the Houston area. Go ahead, next slide.
Jasmine, you got to flip.
Maybe next slide. And since I'm lecturing to young people today, I would like to kind of break down briefly what it takes to get to become a doctor. So basically, you have 4 years of undergraduate studies. You can basically major in anything you want, biology, economics, English, whatever you want, as long as you take the prerequisites for medical school. And then after that, you take a standardized test for entry into medical school. And then after that test, you apply to medical school. Medical school is 4 years. After the 4 years of training, you have 3 to 4 years of hands-on training, actual work for your specialty. And for myself, I did 3 years, 1 year of internal medicine, which is general practice, and then 3 years of ophthalmology. And I went into further training 2 more years for vitreoretinal surgery. And now we're here. Next slide. So I'm just going to go over a little basic anatomy, I just want to make a clarification that some of these pictures are very graphic, the pictures that I got for the presentation, I put all the references on the bottom of each slide there. So basic anatomy, the eyeball we call a globe because it's round. The front part of the eye is called the cornea, and it's basically like a window or a windshield into your soul. Just kidding. there's a space filled with liquid called the anterior chamber right behind the cornea. And behind that, you're going to have your iris, which is the colored part of your eye. And behind that, you're going to have a crystalline lens, which is what we're all born with. And in the space that looks more orangey or pink, that fills up, occupies most of the space of the eye, is a jelly material called vitreous. And the layers of the back of the eye are the retina, and then layers of blood vessels, and then the sclera, which is the part of the white part of your eye. And then also the optic nerve, which is the yellow line in the back to your right there. Okay, next slide. So two basic mechanisms of injury in sports is basically a blunt trauma to the eye from balls, bats, whatnot. So you're going to have a coup and contra-coup injuries. A coup injury is where you have impact at the site of impact and you have damage at the site of impact. And then the contra-coup injury is where you have the impact at the site of contact. It pushes the eye backwards, and then you have a recoil, and then that recoil is called the contra-coup injury. And here it's a picture on this slide of the brain, but the same thing happens to the eyeball because it's in an enclosed space. Next slide. So we're just going to break down the types of injuries in the eye here. So we categorize them by closed globe and open globe. And for the most part of this lecture, I'm going to talk more about closed globe injuries. So you can have contusions or lamellar lacerations. What lamellar laceration means is that you don't have a complete hole in your eye. So when we go to open globe, that means there's a hole in the eyes through a laceration. And so there's different types of lacerations. You can have penetrating, which means there's an entry wound, but no exit wound. And then an IOFB means that there's an intraocular foreign body. Here you can have, we've seen pencils to the eyeball, nails, different things, but related to sports-wise, it's very rare for us to see an intraocular foreign body. We see rocks into the eye, metal pieces, and that's really related to when you're doing something at high velocity, and then that that high velocity particle gets into the eye that way. So people lawn mowing and then the hit a rock and then the rock flies into the eye. So that's very important to wear protective eyewear when you're doing those types of activities. And then also a perforating injury is when you have an entry wound and also an exit wound. And that's really rare as well. But that's going to be beyond the scope of this lecture. So next slide, please. So you can have an eyelid laceration, believe it or not, with sports. And the reason how you would get this is because basically a finger to the eye. So I've seen kids that play basketball, and they'd reach up for a layup or whatever, try and get the ball, and you kind of scratch down, and they pull the eyelid down. So I think this is going to be the maybe most gruesome picture. And so so that is a pretty obvious injury. Basically, you want to just keep this injury. You don't want to put anything on it. Kind of keep it clean and dry, and then go to see the doctor as soon as possible. If you can't go to a doctor as soon as possible, I just wet some water on a gauze and just put it over there to kind of keep the tissues moist and not dry out.
All right, let me jump in for a second. So for those of you that are listening later, there's a picture. Again, I'll put the slideshow in the show notes, so check it out. But it looks almost as if you cut down the center of the bottom eyelid and then just folded it down. And so you've seen this? You've seen this injury?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And then how did this happen?
So basically trying to get the ball on a rebound and the opposing team tried to grab the ball and swiped it and got his finger into the student's eye. There's like a sac. I guess when you pull your eyelid down, there's a space there. And so his finger got caught there and then he just ripped down. Hmm. And that's really rare for something like that to happen, but it can happen.
Is that the only way that type of injury, or like if you're a softball player and the foul ball comes up, can that also rip your eyeball?
It's very rare that happens. Very rare.
Okay.
Next slide, please. So this is more common sports injury related eye condition. It's called a corneal abrasion. So basically, if you have an eyeball, a basketball, soccer ball, softball hit in the eye, you can cause a scratch in the front surface of the eye. And in this picture, we use a dye called fluorescein to help highlight the cells that are damaged. And so the damaged cells look more green. And so this is a picture of the front of an eye, and there's a green patch of that's colored in front of the eye that indicates that there's some damage to that tissue there. So for this, what you're going to have is symptoms that the student's going to have is decreased vision, pain, light sensitivity, and then also a lot of tearing. So whenever you have an eye injury, you always want to assess how their vision is. So you always ask your teammate or classmate, how's your vision? And then, you know, usually you can go from there. Do you have pain? And so those are the two important questions to ask your teammates whenever they have an eye injury. And so for this, we basically keep the eye lubricated. This is very painful. And the reason why it's very painful is because there are lots of nerve endings that supply the cornea, which is the front part of the eye. And this is important because whenever we have any dirt or dust that goes into our eye, it's a protective mechanism. We feel it so that we can blink our eyes and then to protect our eyes from injury.
So when you say lubricate the eye, how are you going to do that? Because the last time you talked about getting a gauze wet and put it on there with the laceration, what are you doing here?
Right. So this lubrication, for us, we may or may not use an antibiotic ointment or gel. And then also we use artificial tears. Typically, we have to, when something like this happens, you have to examine the whole eye as a whole, make sure there's nothing going on in the back part of the eye as well. And so it depends on if there's anything else that's going on. So an antibiotic ointment or
the times that I've dealt with a corneal abrasion, you know, we go see either the ophthalmologist or optometrist, and they'll, you know, prescribe the artificial tears, but there's also a lidocaine or xylocaine in it with an antibiotic. Is that normal protocol, or are these different types of?
Okay, so typically I don't prescribe anything with a xylocaine or I guess a deadener, like, yeah, so that you don't feel it. And the reason why I don't do that is because if you are going to have another injury to your eye, you can't feel it, and it can make the situation worse.
So at the times where somebody said, you know, that corneal abrasion, the description they'll give is, feels like something is, you know, it's very irritated.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would rather them feel that,
yes,
so that they can protect themselves rather than not feel that.
Exactly.
And go out and do something.
Exactly. Okay. And when you don't feel what's going on in your eye, if you're rubbing a piece of sand in your eye and you keep rubbing it and rubbing it, you can actually get that sand or foreign body into the front part of your eye or into the chamber of your eye and cause more problems, mm-hmm, and create an overload. That's a great question. Next slide, please. So the next thing that can happen, I'm going from the front part of the eye to the back part of the eye. So this is the space between the cornea, the front part of the eye, and then also between the iris, which is the colored part of the eye. This is the anterior chamber. And so basically you can have inflammation. And what it looks like is basically if you open a window and then you let the sunlight go in and you see all these little particles that kind of float up, looks like dust particles. That's basically what we see inside your eye if you have this traumatic iritis. So this causes pain and can cause decreased vision. And usually it's from the damage or trauma to the iris, and then the iris releases all these inflammatory mediators. And we treat this with some steroid medications, and we have to monitor the patients pretty closely because if you have inflammation in the back part of your eye, that will really cause decreased vision. And all of these eye injuries need to be followed pretty closely because we need to look for other bad things that can happen in association with these eye injuries.
So all the chemical mediators that would be released in ankle sprain, right? Leukotaxin, necrosin, histamine.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
It's the same thing that's happening in this iritis.
Exactly.
And so what's, you said that you're going to treat it with a corticosteroid because that's going to decrease inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
What else would you be able to treat it with, and what types of things are you looking for?
Okay. So for this patient, usually we'll treat them with steroids, topical, mm-hmm, steroids, and then also a medication called atropine. And what that atropine does, it dilates the eye, but then, mm-hmm, it also stabilizes the blood barrier, mm-hmm, and to decrease the inflammation as well.
So same atropine, like if somebody's in cardiac arrest, they'd administer atropine.
Right, but that atropine is administered through your IV, and the atropine that we use is an eye drop.
Interesting. This is so cool.
Next slide, please.
So this wouldn't go away by itself. It would need the steroids?
Sometimes it'll go away by itself, but if I see inflammation in the eye after some trauma, I'm pretty much going to start on the steroid.
And so that iritis is happening because of trauma. Is it some sort of, like, for instance, somebody takes a racquetball to the eye,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yes.
You're going to expect iritis. You know, you may expect a corneal abrasion. You may expect a detached retina, but you're definitely looking for this iritis. You know,
right.
Can you walk us through?
So basically, it's something to look for. Not, mm-hmm, every patient is going to have the iritis.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be, if you have the injury, it may last for a day, and then it'll go away. And then by the time you go see the eye doctor, we don't see the inflammation anymore.
And will they know it? Like, will they see floaters or something?
So you won't see floaters. What you'll see is you'll have light sensitivity. Mm-hmm. And that's there's a pattern going on here. So if you have decreased vision, light sensitivity, those are really things that you have to go see the eye doctor.
So in a typical scenario, right, somebody's concussed, they're photophobic, they're having some trouble with vision. All these are confounding factors.
Right.
So there's a huge differential there.
Exactly. And so that's why, all these eye findings, we use a microscope to look at mm-hmm. these things. You know, it's not something that you can just look, straight in your eye and be able to see it. So that's why it's so important to get an eye exam. For me, I would rather see a patient and not find anything and be like, okay, you had this trauma, but your eye looks great. That's fine.
In your recommendation, when somebody receives a blunt trauma from a concussion, you would also recommend that an eye exam is part of that concussion evaluation.
Right, especially if they're complaining of decreased vision, photophobia.
Which are all signs and symptoms of a normal concussion.
Yeah. Interesting.
Okay.
And then I also recommend using eye protection for everything. So.
Yeah,
depends on how much you see and stuff. But yeah, I would recommend just getting it evaluated. So all the professional sports teams have an eye doctor on staff,
right.
And so and most of them, for the most part, they don't have that many eye injuries. But there's a lot of corneal abrasion stuff that go on.
And so in athletic training, we're trained to work with otoscopes and ophthalmoscopes, right? Mm-hmm. But my understanding of the ophthalmoscope is that I'm able to look and say, okay, I know that's a retina, and I know what a normal retina is supposed to look like, and I know that's not normal. So mm-hmm. refer to Dr. Pham, right?
Right.
And so if I were to take an ophthalmoscope and look, I'd be able to see this iritis if I knew what I was looking for? Or is it a higher caliber type?
The ophthalmoscope, the ophthalmoscopes that I've used, you can't see iritis. You can have a portable slit lamp, mm-hmm. which is like the microscope, to mm-hmm. be able to see the iritis. and also the ophthalmoscopes that most people use is a very limited view of the retina. Mm-hmm. So if you can see the optic nerve with the ophthalmoscope and a few vessels, then that's great. But there's another ophthalmoscope called the panoptic, where it gives you a wider field view. Mm-hmm. All right. So our next eye injury is called a hyphema, and this is where you have injury to the eye causes some bleeding from the iris vessels into the anterior chamber of the eye, and you can see red layer of blood, and because of gravity, it makes the blood settle to the bottom, and then you can see a distinct line across. Sometimes you can have blood fill up the whole entire front part of the eye, and that's called an eight-ball hyphema. And we call it an eight-ball hyphema because it's an eight-ball and pool is black, and so the whole eye looks black. So you can have decreased vision because of this hyphema, pain, and the pain may be related to eye pressure issues. So normally what happens with the hyphema or blood in the eye is your body breaks down the blood cells and it gets resorbed by the body again. And so sometimes if the blood stays in the eye too long, it can cause scar tissue to form. And also when scar tissue forms, it blocks the outflow channels of fluid in your eye. And mm-hmm. so it can cause increased eye pressure. And increased eye pressure is bad because when you have high eye pressure in the eye for a prolonged period of time, it causes damage to the optic nerve. And that optic nerve sends message to your brain so that you can see. And once you have damage to the optic nerve, it's permanent and it's not reversible.
Mm. So I hope you don't mind me.
No, I love it.
All right. So with this hyphema, right, you're talking about going back to the orthopedic setting. This would be synonymous with, let's say I had like a myositis insufficiens from a deep contusion, or I had this increased pressure, right? And so if I had like this subungual hematoma, it would be easy for me to release the pressure, right? Mm-hmm. But the pressure is building up here, and there's no way to release it. So you're asking the body to reabsorb all this without creating damage to the nerve.
Right. So that's why it's very important to see an eye doctor when you have something like this, because if, for the most part, the eye pressure is fine, but if the eye pressure goes up, then we have to put you on medications to help decrease the pressure. So there's medications that help decrease the body from making more fluid into the eye.
Sure.
So it's called aqueous vasopressin, and then there's also medication that increases the outflow of fluid from the eye. And so those are how we help to control the eye. We start with drops first, and if the drops aren't working, then we start on some pill. And so the pill is called acetazolamide or Diamox that we typically use, and that really blocks the sodium channel, sodium potassium channel. So yeah, or sodium chloride channel. Sorry.
So everything that's happening in the eye is the same thing that's happening all over the body.
Right. It's more contained space.
Right. We just know it's a very contained space.
Right.
You have less to work with.
Exactly, yeah.
Interesting, okay.
All right, Dr. Pham, I'm going to jump in real quick. There's a question from the live stream. I should be showing it right there. All right, so this is Greg jumping in. What can cause a patient to have unequal pupils with no history of trauma, no history of putting in drops or contacts or touching the eye? Pupils did even out within 24 hours. I think that means, by the way, or between. Within 24 hours between, one of the two. We couldn't figure out what caused them to be unequals. Any thoughts there?
So usually there's a big, huge differential for unequal pupils. So we always want to think about trauma, and this patient obviously had no trauma. We want to think about a Horner syndrome, which causes meiosis, which means constriction of the pupil, anhidrosis, which means no sweating. And so those are some of the things that we have to think about. There's a thing called Eddie's tonic pupil that can also cause pupils to be unequal. You can also have physiologic anisocoria, which means it's just a difference in pupil size that's just physiologic. That's normal for that person. You can have tears to the iris, sphincter tears that can cause the pupils to be unequal sizes. Also, very rarely this happens. You can have migraine headaches that can cause pupils to be unequal sizes. But in young patients, I think that it's going to be very important to do a workup to roll out the big bad stuff like masses and tumors.
Right, because you know typically you see anisocoria, you're thinking pressure on that third cranial nerve.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Right? And so what you're saying is that it could be congenital.
Right.
It could be these other pathological diseases that are causing this.
Exactly.
And so...
Yes, it can range from anywhere from being real benign, which means it's, you know, from the physiologic anisocoria, to a tumor or mass. And so I think that's one thing in medicine that we shouldn't take lightly is that when you see something, you can't just pinpoint or you just can't say, oh, it's not a big deal. You know, you have to look at the entire picture, like the person who asked the question, they had no history of trauma and different things. So.
You know, obviously in athletic training, these different populations, so if you're dealing with school-age children, middle school, high school, some colleges, they may have been prescribed certain medicines to either help them in school or certain medicines, you know, just along the way. Are there some medicines that can also produce this, you know, anisocoria that we need to be aware of? So if a student is on a stimulant for a learning disability or something along those lines, would a side effect be this?
Not particularly. Not like something that's jumping right at me, out at me. I mean, there's medications that do affect the back of the eye that cause increased pressure and stuff like that, but not typically an even pupil.
Mm-hmm. All right, so here we're talking about inside of the iris, right? This bleeding is hyphema. What about when it's on the white part of the eye? Because, you know, I had a coach come up to me, hey, does this look normal? I was like, man, I don't know. I know that the bleeding can cause pressure. You may want to get checked out. And so he ended up going, and then his optometrist or ophthalmologist said, you know, yeah, I think it'll resolve within 2 weeks. And
yes.
So those are two different things. Are we going to get to that?
Right. That's something that I didn't add to that, but that's a great question. So it's called a subconjunctival hemorrhage. So it's basically bleeding in the white part of your eye. And that typically doesn't have any visual changes. Usually you don't have any pain. Some patients will have some mild irritation. Like it can feel, the eye can feel a little dry. And so typically for that, it will clear up in a couple of weeks. And I tell my patients that it'll be red and then it'll change to green and then yellow as the red blood cells start to break down. But that doesn't affect vision and that usually improves.
So it's the same color we'd see like in an ankle sprain, right? This
exactly.
Infusion and ecchymosis that's happening in the eyeball and it's just going to get reabsorbed.
Right.
But we can't put a bag of ice on the eyeball.
No.
We just got to let it...
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of times you just need to give them reassurance because it just looks a lot worse than it actually is. You know, if you come in with bleeding around your whole eye in the white part of your eye and your vision is 20/20, I'm going to be, you know, that's great. So
great.
All right. Next slide, please.
Jasmine, you're switching back. There you go. All right.
It's Halloween coming up. This is really cool stuff.
So this is a picture of some iris sphincter tears. And it's your pupils are supposed to be round. And sometimes because of trauma, you can have tears in the colored part of your eye. And what it'll look like a little wedge, like a tip of an arrow. And it's very subtle and it's very difficult to see. And so when you have trauma with iris sphincter tears, it can cause your pupils to look really, really weird. It won't look perfectly round. Mm. Sometimes it'll look like a tadpole or oval, things like that. So,
So what causes an iris sphincter tear?
Blunt trauma. Just the force of the trauma can cause a tear.
So we've talked about a lot of blunt traumas to the eye. Are some of these also, when you're taking a history, is it possible like somebody's lifting a lot of weight, right, and they increase their intrathecal or intracranial pressure? Can that cause some of these, like iritis? Can that?
That's a great question. So when you increase intra-abdominal pressure, you can also increase intraocular pressure. Mm-hmm. And so you can have things like bleed. You can bust one of the small blood vessels, superficial blood vessels in the white part of your eye and cause a subconjunctival hemorrhage. So students who are like weightlifters, things like mm-hmm. that, they can get subconjunctival hemorrhages.
Just by weightlifting, by not exactly. breathing through it.
Exactly. And then there's also studies that are looking at intraocular pressure with weightlifting. Mm-hmm. And so it's pretty interesting. Your eye pressure does go up transiently with weightlifting. Next slide, please.
Ooh.
So this is really, really blunt trauma. So this is called an iridodialysis, where the iris is separated from the white part of the eye. And it looks really bad. And it can be really bad because it can cause decreased pressure or decreased eye pressure or increased eye pressure. And so typically when patients have this, you have to check the rest of their eye as well to see if there's any subluxation of the lens or a hemorrhage in the back of the eye. I did a surgery on a patient with iridodialysis from a trauma. He was in a car accident. He had his lens dislocated and then the iridodialysis. And so I took his lens out and I did a repair. So it's more like we call it iridoplasty, where we just kind of reconnect it back to where it belongs, and we put an artificial lens in his eye.
So iridodialysis occurred from that coup contra coup, right? So if he's in a car accident, he had that massive forward and backward, mm-hmm. and that acute blunt pressure caused this tear.
Mm-hmm. And it's like wow. really, really severe wow. trauma.
You know what I love here? Is that she just glanced right over. I took his lens off and put a fake one on. She just talked about it like it was normal, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
And now he can see to Saturn.
Right?
And so, and now he's got this focus. So let's say, let's take it out of that car accident. I've got a quarterback that gets hit from a big lineman from the back. Mm-hmm. That linear coup, contra coup, right? Because we know in concussions now there's a lot of other movements that happen. But that linear coup, contra coup, would that be enough pressure to cause something like that?
Not typically. It would be very rare. I mean, we can see lens dislocations from that, but you have to have an underlying problem for that to occur. Like, we've all heard about Marfan syndrome, where it's like collagen disorder.
Yeah.
And so the lens is held up, suspended in the eye by structures called zonulin. And those are basically made out of collagen. And so in Marfan's disease, you have a defect in that, and then so it's more brittle, and so mm-hmm. it breaks easy. So if you have an injury, a blunt injury, that can cause location. Next slide, please. And this, we're moving towards the lens subluxation. You can see the natural lens kind of going down, and we call this a sunset sign, where it's like setting like the sun. And typically, we would see this in patients with an underlying collagen disorder, like Marfan syndrome, because these zonules, they're very thin, and they look like hair-like projections, and there are thousands of them that keep the lens suspended in the eye, but they're very, very strong. So in cataract surgery, you remove this lens, but you leave the zonules still suspended, you know, intact, so that we can put the artificial lens in. And sometimes in some of my surgeries where you have a lens subluxation or some different problems where I have to take the whole entire thing out, the zonules are very, very strong, and so it's very difficult to take it out. And so, but in patients with Marfan syndrome, the zonules are more brittle and break more easily. And in a patient like this, what we would have to do is we would go inside the eye and remove that lens and then put an artificial lens in. And
my favorite word is zonule. Right.
And that's that would be a lot of discussion with the patient and a lot of I guess preparing them mentally for the surgery and then also for the follow-up visits and guide them through how long it's going to take for their vision to get back. Next slide, please. So this is rare. You can have a traumatic cataract. If you have blunt trauma to the eye, the coup and contra-coup forces again, and so the lens can turn a complete white color. And this you can see in some patients, and usually it's from harder injuries like metal to the metal pipe or something to the eye.
Wow.
Things like that. I think in sports related injuries, I rarely see.
Maybe like in hockey, somebody would take a puck to the eye,
right.
Or
exactly.
In hockey they're it's nuts. They don't have mandatory
right.
eye shields.
Yeah,
so.
My brain is not on hockey because we're in Texas, but yeah, yes, right. Exactly right.
So if you took a puck to the mm-hmm. eye or a stick to the eye, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. that would be enough to create something like
yes.
this.
So and in cases like this, we would take the lens out like in our cataract surgery, put an artificial lens
and
in.
The zonules are still there.
Depends. So we have to assess
just wanted
the
to say the word.
I wanted to write that word in.
We have to assess the situation of the zonules. If they're intact, then we'll just do a straightforward cataract surgery and place the lens inside the bag. But if the zonules are messed up, then we have to sew in a lens. And at the end here, I'll show you a video of how we sew in the lens.
Cool.
Next slide, please. So this is called commotio retinae, and this is typically from blunt trauma, BB gun to the eyeball, a ball, whatnot, coup and contra coup. Those forces are going to dissipate somewhere, and so sometimes they will choose the retina to dissipate in. And the retina has different layers, like a sandwich. There's 9 different layers, and the top layer of the retina is called the nerve fiber layer. And so the forces shear the causes disruption of the retina, and then it causes this edema or swelling of the back of the eye. And so what it'll look like, it'll look white, and your vision, most of our vision is going to be 20/20. But if you have the swelling in the back of your eye, you only be able to see hand motion, or 20/400 is really, really significant visual change. On exam, you won't see anything. It'll be a normal exam until you look at the back of the eye, you see this white spot. And so generally, the vision will return in a few weeks, but the patient is more at risk for getting abnormal blood vessel growth in the back of the eye, mm-hmm. Swelling in the back of the eye that's more permanent. So those glaucoma, so those things we kind of watch out for.
So you hear about another condition that uses this word commotio, right? Commotio cordis, where it's this heart kind of thumping and it immediately stops. And so is it possible that the eye just dies from this?
No, not typically.
No.
There's other disease entity causes that. You can have an avulsion of the optic where mm-hmm. it's completely dissected, and that can cause death. Mm. And there's going back there. And the only time that I saw an avulsion of the eye or the optic nerve was a gunshot wound, bilateral avulsion of the optic.
Wow.
Straight.
Wow.
So.
And they lived?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
So that's crazy.
This young man is like 20-something years old and was involved in a gunshot patient, and he woke up from his coma blind.
And but so the bullet went through and through here and took out both optic nerves. Holy cow.
Yeah. And that's very
that?
Rare.
That's crazy.
That's nuts. Yeah. Other than that, you're walking around with a patch. Your name is Jack Sparrow. That's a peg leg McGregor.
So that causes death of the eye. But in the commotio retinae, for the most part, good prognosis.
Hey, I have a homework assignment for all the students. Go look up what the Latin translation of commotio means.
Got it. She's Googling it right now.
Yeah.
Okay, so next slide, please. So in young patients, we always talk about the jelly in the eye. It's called the vitreous. And basically, it's mostly water. But when we're born, there's a structure. I describe it as a wooden frame of a house. And then inside, in between the wooden frame, it's filled with water. And over time, that wooden frame breaks down or degenerates. And then it becomes more of a liquid. And that's the normal aging process. In young patients, the vitreous is more like a jelly material. So when you have a coup, contra coup injury, there's really not much room for it to move. And if it's more of a liquid, it can move around a little bit more. So when you have those types of injuries, the jelly or the vitreous is very adherent to the retina, and if you have an injury, you can cause the forces can cause a cause you to have a retinal tear. And you can see in the picture that basically it's like a U shape, and we call this a horseshoe tear, where it has a flap and that's lifted. And then you can see the space behind the retina more of an orangey color. And in these situations, we have to see the patients right away. And if it's just a localized tear, then we do a laser procedure to help seal the tear to prevent fluid from going through the back of the retina and detach the retina. And so the symptoms that patients will have: flashes of light, floaters, decreased vision, and if they have if there's fluid in the back of the eye, they can also describe a shade coming through their field of vision. So those are really
important. On physical exam, right, you have somebody that took a hit, and so on physical exam, you know, obviously when you're, you know, we're trained that optic nerve, right? Can you see this? Can you see this? And so their field of vision is going to be cut.
Right.
And so as I start to get on that periphery, they're going to lose it.
Right.
And that's a good indication, a clinical examination for me to say, this may be a retinal tear, this may be a retinal detachment.
Right.
Right. So you're clear here, but I lose it here.
Right.
Okay.
And next slide. So here's a picture of a retinal detachment. You can see up on top there, the color looks a little bit different. It's hard to see 3D wise, but it's more of a yellowishy orange, and you can tell that there's fluid behind there. And so what we really want to do is prevent the fluid from going down into the center part of the eye called the macula, which is right next to the nerve. And so typically if you have a MAC on, which a retinal detachment, which means that the fluid has not infiltrated through the middle part of the eye, you have a good visual prognosis. So we would do surgery to repair this retinal detachment.
And going back to the ophthalmoscopes that we use, would we be able to see that or no?
This one, probably not, because okay. You'll probably just be able to see it in the nerve.
Right, and that would look normal.
Right.
Right.
Next slide, please. So this is Isaiah Austin. Do y'all know about Isaiah Austin?
Isn't he the one that was drafted and has the Marfan?
Right. Yeah.
So he had Marfan syndrome, right? And they discovered all these different abnormalities.
Right.
And this brings up a bigger issue. I mean, yeah, you have the disease, but can you imagine he made it through all those other PPEs, right? And they kept on getting cleared and kept on getting cleared.
And so he wrote a book called Dream Again, and it basically tells his story about what he went through. So as a child, I think he had bleeding in his eye from playing basketball. And so there was blood in his eye, and then and pressures went up, he developed a retinal detachment. And so he went through multiple surgeries, but he was still able to play basketball all this time. And so when you have two eyes, you have what we call binocular vision. You can have stereo visual acuity, which means you can have really great depth perception. And so when you have one eye that's out, your depth perception is going to be off. So Isaiah, what's great about him is he uses other cues to figure out his depth perception, and that's why he did so well throughout college career. And so this story really is great because it tells his journey, but then it also tells how perseverance and then overcoming obstacles stuff. So I would highly recommend it if you guys want a book to
read. Yeah, an amazing story.
So next slide, please. So this is a video. It's of an intraocular foreign body removal. This patient was a young patient that had a traumatic cataract and then intraocular foreign body, and it was like a piece of rock.
And this is a video?
Yes.
All right, Ariana, you have to click on the... There you go.
There you go.
All right, so... There will be people listening live, so you can just continue describing.
So basically, this is a picture of the eyeball, and what we did was we put three trocars, trocars for fluid infusion into the eyeball to maintain its shape, and then the other two are for our instrument, our light instrument, and then also our cutter. So in order to get to the foreign body, we clean out the jelly material called the vitreous, and then we use our instruments to go in to get the foreign body. We have to assess the situation where the damage is and everything, and we use a blade to cut open the white part of the eye so that we can get forceps in there, and the forceps go in there, and then we pull the foreign body out.
And all this is happening under microscope.
Yes, that's right. And so it's like delivering a baby. He's gonna come in a second. Here it comes. And we always have to make sure that the incision is wide enough to deliver the foreign body, because when the foreign body gets caught in the white part of the eye, it's like really difficult. So right now she's enlarging the wound to make it a little bit bigger so that she can pull the foreign body out.
And do you remember what it was that went in?
It was a rock, and you can see it.
All right, so right now they're...
They're enlarging the wound, so it's in the white part of the eye with a blade. And she's using forceps, and she's cutting it wider on both sides there. And this was my mentor that did the surgery, Dr. Reynosa.
You okay, Destiny?
And there is the piece of rock. See
wow.
How it gets caught. And so after this, the rock is removed. We sew up the eye. And then we also put an artificial lens in. So if you can imagine, the patient has a lot of inflammation after this. And so whenever there's a foreign body into the eye, there's a lot of counseling that goes on to tell the patient like what to expect, how much vision they're going to get back. So.
And so, you know, this is like growing up with my friends, you know, we would get like in rock fights. This is it.
Right.
This is what happens.
This is what happens.
And the funniest thing is that the one that I really got in rock fights a lot with, his dad was an eye doctor. I think he was just trying to generate business. I thought that was cool.
That's funny. So next slide, please. And so you can also have bleeding in the middle cavity of the eye called vitreous hemorrhage. And that's when the coup contra coup injury causes shearing of the blood vessels in the back of the eye. You can push play. And so we do this through the same mechanism. We place the trocars, three of them. And this patient had diabetes, but she had bleeding in the eye. It wasn't from a trauma, but I just wanted to show you. So here's insertion of the trocar.
And the trocar is an instrument you guys are using?
It's kind of like a tube, like an inner tube, where we it helps us place our other instruments in there.
It's a delivery apparatus.
Yeah, so it's like a...
Oh, there's music that comes with it. Is this what you all are operating to?
Right, yeah. I usually operate to, like, Selena Gomez.
Do you really? You know, it depends on the specialty, like orthopedic surgeons, ACDC, ophthalmologists, this.
I'm just kidding.
When y'all operate, where do y'all put the anesthesia?
So we use an injection
not
of
anesthesia,
medication.
Anesthesia.
Yeah. We put an injection of numbing medicine in the back of the eye.
Y'all put it right here?
Yeah, in the back. Mm. So you can see,
obviously.
It looks very cloudy and white there.
Looks like a worm.
This is incredible.
It really looks like there's a worm swimming inside.
I can see them dancing in the operating room, you know?
And see, you can see the blood, like the red spots of blood in the back of the eye there. And as the blood clears from the back of the eye, it also changes colors, just like how red blood cells break down. And so some of it will look fluffy and yellow. Mm-hmm. And so, and I did this surgery. And this patient, she was a 24-year-old Hispanic female who had diabetes and had the blood in her eye. But it's the same surgery that we would do for a vitreous hemorrhage from trauma.
Sure.
So typically vitreous hemorrhages or bleeding in the eye clears up for the most part, and it takes several months to clear up. But if it doesn't clear up, then we do the surgery.
So you said that, obviously, you know, to be a physician, you go 4 years in medical school. Where did you go to medical school?
I went to Southern Illinois University.
Oh, you're a Saluki.
Yes.
Okay. And then you did your internship in internal medicine where?
In New Orleans.
At where in New
Orleans? Ochsner.
Ochsner. Mm-hmm. And then you did your residency at Ochsner?
At LSU.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I lived in Louisiana for 9 years.
Oh, awesome.
I was just out there this last weekend. And then you did your fellowship?
At LSU as well.
LSU New Orleans.
We covered all of Southern Louisiana.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Basically.
A lot of eye injuries in Louisiana.
Right. Fishing
a lot of eye injuries and teeth injuries.
Right.
That's what it is.
Okay, so that's the video for the vitreous hemorrhage. Next slide, please. So this is... Okay, this is a video of placing an artificial lens. Dr. Tran from our practice did this one. So here we're preparing the scleral bed, which is the white part of the eye, for the surgery. So we're cutting down, controlling the bleeding with some cautery, which is, and we're marking the eye so that we can see where 3 and 9 o'clock are. And it needs to be very precise so that we sew in the lens properly. So we're marking, pre-marking all the spots where we're going to put the trocars in.
This is crazy.
And so now we're putting the trocar in here. We have the camera that's attached to the microscope and then the DVD recorder. We have a thing called a lid speculum that keeps the eye open.
But like, you know how it's like small and then y'all almost like...
Oh, no. No. Good question. So we're putting all the trocars in place.
Wow. It's so different from orthopedic surgery, you know? It's like...
And so here, we put a cover over the front part of the eye to protect the eye from light, because when you have so much light for a long time in the eye, it can cause damage to the retina.
So like ski blindness.
Yes.
That's the same thing.
Yeah.
snow blindness. Yeah, correct.
Yeah, snow blindness.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so we're cutting through the front part of the eye with a blade so that we can slide the lens in.
So if it just asks, do y'all put fluid inside of the eye?
I know, like you were saying. That's a balanced salt solution.
Oh, yeah, it keeps it from being dried out.
That's right. And then we drop the drop on top of the eye to keep them drying out. And so this is the artificial lens. He's going to load the sutures through the lens. It has four different holes where we load the suture. And he's going to thread it through the trocars and then sew it in that way.
It's amazing. Jeremy, I have to...
Yeah, and students actually are going to be following you out, too. So.
Okay. Well, I got to go to NASA, so they're not going to NASA with
me. No.
It was a real pleasure meeting you.
Thank you.
If I gave you my card, would you come and lecture to our athletic training program?
Oh, awesome. Of course.
Is that okay?
Yeah, that
would you email me?
Sure, no problem.
Great. Thank you so much.
It's a
real pleasure.
Thank you.
Jeremy, thank you for including me.
Yes, sir.
The next episode will be Wednesday.
Should be.
Not this Wednesday.
Should be the next Wednesday.
Okay. I'm going to
make it. The 21st, I think.
Because I teach from 10 to 11:30 on Monday and Wednesday, so I'm going to make it a point to be here.
All right.
Whether the students are coming with me or not.
All right. Sounds
here.
Good.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Nice meeting you. I'll be calling you.
All right. So I want to jump in here real quick, and we may have time to, you know, before you have to get back to do some more videos and stuff. I'm going to switch seats.
Okay.
All right. All right. So good there. Let me switch over to me. So one of the questions I have, I know it's hard to see me there, is the thing that we see most is going to be dirt or being poked in the
mm-hmm,
eye.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do we treat those on the field?
Okay, on the field. So what you need to do is get eye wash solution and just irrigate the eye as much as possible.
All right, so is a specific eye wash type solution that you prefer, or is it just kind of any?
So eye wash solution is pH balanced, so it needs to be specifically say eye wash on there. Not saline solution, not contact lens solution. So it'll specifically say eye wash. And so it usually comes in a squirt bottle. And what you do is you ask the patient to look up, and then you will hold, when they look up, you pull their lower eyelid down and you squeeze the solution in there. And then you'll ask them to look down and you pull their eyelid up, and then you squeeze the solution in there. And that usually gets out all the debris.
So we have eye wash. It says eye wash on it, and then there's eye wash cups. So We put that solution in the cup, and then they put their eye down, look up, blink, 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 and then back. Is that more or less the same thing?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So good. So that's more or less all we can do on the field to
remove
that stuff.
Right.
And now, is there anything I can do? Because I always tell the kids, look, you got poked an eye. It's going to take some time. There's nothing I can do to make it better faster. There's nothing I can do to help you get back out on the court or field faster. Is that correct?
Right. Like I said, with Dr. Yellen, he was asking, is there tetracaine or some numbing solution that you can use? And I would highly not recommend that.
Right. Yeah. I was talking about specifically me, like, you know, maybe I have volleyball on Tuesday, somebody gets poked in the eye.
Yeah. You just got to sit it out. I mean, I think when you're playing sports that you want to be a team player, you want to be anxious to play and help the team out, but you have to think about the long-term consequences of what's going to happen if you play or if you go back on the field. You know, I mean, for eye injuries, it's not that critical as compared to other things that I've seen, you know, in sports-related injuries, but that's something to consider.
All right. The other thing is, now that we have them off the field, and he talked about having the otoscope or the ophthalmoscope. Mm-hmm. I don't think we have any of those here in our athletic training room. I haven't been trained to use them. Is that something that, in realistically, like in a high school setting, is going to be beneficial?
No, I don't think so. I think
I'm never going to have you come to one of our games, right? you're here because you're in the presentation. So.
Right, right. So I think it's good if you have eye wash on hand, artificial tears on hand, and maybe an artificial tear ointment, actually. So if, you know, they're in pain or discomfort, you can wash the eye out and put some artificial tears in it and put the eye ointment in. And usually if they're having a lot of burning pain, whatnot, then just lightly tape the eye with duct tape just for a short period until they get it off. But, you know, there's other situations where it's more urgent. If they have complete loss of vision and they need seen right.
Is there any reason we wouldn't use eye wash or artificial tears or the artificial tear ointment?
Okay, so that's not going to hurt anything. So if you have a situation where there's an injury and you use the eye wash, it's not going to hurt anything. If there is something inside the eye, like a penetrating injury or perforating injury or a foreign body in the eye, even if you use irrigation to wash it out, that would still be okay. It's just if it's severe pain, severe decrease in vision, and you knew that something went into the eyeball and not just dirt, like a piece of metal or something like that, then try not to push on the eye until you get seen, because if it's an open injury and you push on the eye, the contents of the eye come out, and then you can also increase infection risk, stuff like that. But for the typical run-of-the-mill eye injury in high school and stuff, you know, artificial tears and eye wash, pretty benign.
All right. Sorry to ask. Is there any, besides everybody wearing glasses all the time, is there anything that we can do to prevent eye injuries on the field, sports related?
Eye injuries on the field. I mean, when you're doing a contact sport, that's just one of the risk factors of playing sport. You know, in football, you have the helmets, and that kind of covers it. But the only recommendations for eye protection are usually kids that wear glasses or corrective lenses. You know, I think the recommendation is not to wear contact lenses when you're playing sports, but more like a rec specs looking thing. Mm-hmm. So that's protective, and plus you can help you see better. So not anything specific other than the eye protection.
Yeah, Rachel, she's watching live. She threw out there that a lot of our fields are artificial turf, so they have all these little black rubber pieces.
Uh-huh.
So we get those in the eyes a lot with soccer, with football, with rugby, uh-huh. that kind
yeah,
of thing.
And that's so. Irrigation with the eye wash.
All right. And then so what if they feel like the irrigation with the eye wash doesn't get it out? Just do it again and again?
Yes, you can repeat it like 2 or 3 times until it gets they feel relief. What we do in the office is we flip the eyelid and make sure that it's not embedded in the eyelid and causing scratching. And sometimes if you irrigate it too much, it can cause dryness of the eye and cause more irritation. So there's always a balance there.
And then flipping the eyelid, that's not, I mean, you know, whenever I was in high school, I would see kids doing that themselves. Yeah. But that's not something you'd recommend somebody
no,
like me
I
doing.
No, I wouldn't. I would just let the doctor do it, because when we flip the eyelid, we look under the microscope as well. So we're better.
All right. So again, don't do anything more than we're trained to do. One of the big questions is, if I was going to have a team eye doctor, how would I go about doing that? Would you recommend me finding an optometrist or an ophthalmologist that I need to send the kids to? Because here, I mean, you can see the big Memorial Hermann banner. So
I am credentialed at Memorial Hermann. So if the kids have their own optometrist or eye doctor, then I think
that's going to be best.
That's going to be best. Yeah. And so I would start by seeing their personal eye doctor first. And you can call an optometrist usually optometrists work more on the weekends or ophthalmologists, they're typically somebody on call, but basically the optometrist gatekeeper for eye disease. If they see anything more, then they refer them the appropriate special.
Gotcha. So just to go back over that, start with whoever they have. You know, again, this is high school, this isn't college. College is probably going to, you know, a big D1 school is probably going to have somebody on their, I don't know if payroll is, but they're going to have somebody on their call list. So,
yeah.
All right. So that's probably going to be the best way to go about that.
Right.
All right. Let me see. I think that's most of the questions that I had. I wanted to cover real quick. Did you have other sides that you really wanted to get to? I know you.
Oh, that was it. That was the last video.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Let me see. I think that's all I have here in the chat as far as questions. So there was an article, I kind of had it open over there, but like I said, I changed. So Mike McKinney, he's been on here a couple of times, talked about having these tools ready. So I'm going to just, you can say yes or no, or good idea, bad idea, whatever.
Okay.
So ophthalmoscope, so here at a high school, yes or no? No. Okay, a pen light.
Pen light's a good idea.
Okay. It says light source with blue or cobalt filters.
Not necessarily.
Okay. Vision chart.
Vision, yes.
All right, good. We have those for our physicals. Cotton tip swabs.
Yeah, that would be good.
Saline.
Saline eyewash.
Eyewash. We talked about that. Magnifying glass.
Yeah, I mean, that's it.
All right. Okay. And then eye shield, because he was just talking about having these tools on hand for a team physician to use.
Oh, for the team physician. So if there's a physician, then the cobalt blue light, it's only a good idea if you can have fluorescein, which is a stain that I use to stain for the corneal abrasion. Because if you don't have that stain, the cobalt blue light is not going to give you better.
Gotcha. So then having medications here, but most likely it's going to be the doctor is going to bring them with them,
mm-hmm.
especially in our case, if we just happen to have an overzealous ophthalmologist that wanted to work with Pasadena High School, then so we'd have him bring his own stuff, I guess.
Yeah.
So, all right. Any quick tips about contacts? Because he wrote some different things about, you know, not using your contact lenses when you're playing sports or don't share contact lens cases and those kind of things.
Right. So contact lenses are very hygiene for contact lens wear is very important, and it's not related to sports injury. So we recommend that you don't wear contact lenses when you're playing sports, because it might get dislodged or stuck in your eye or something like that. I mean, we can always take it out, but that's a reason why we don't recommend contact lenses. The eyeglasses will give you more protection in sports. But specifically to contact lenses, hygiene is very important. You don't share anybody else's contact lens case. You have to use contact lens solution, not saliva, not tap water, because that has a lot of bacteria. And when you have bacteria on your contact lens, you can have get corneal ulcers. And corneal ulcers is basically an infection of the front part of the eye, and it's pretty much bad news bears when you get the corneal ulcer. So make sure you take your contact lenses out every night, clean them, and store them in the appropriate solution.
Wow, because that I guess I just missed that, but usually we'll see kids put them in their, like if they drop them on the field, they find them, they put them in their mouth, and they put them back in their eye.
No.
Wow, that's good, because now I know, hey, I need to have that solution so that they can rinse it off and then put it back in.
Right, yeah.
And so preferably send them to the bathroom to wash their hands first.
Exactly. So you can just keep a bottle of the all-purpose solution, mm-hmm. whereas a cleaner, disinfectant, and storage solution all in one, that would help.
All right. Any other parting tips on eye injury?
I just think that if you have a blunt injury to the eye with decreased vision and pain that doesn't get better, I mean, you just need to go see an eye doctor.
So. And again, if you're in the Houston area or even in Katy, because she just said you work out in Katy too, right? Is
that what you said? In Willowbrook, there's offices in Katy, Sugarland, and Houston and Clear Lake.
So I've had a great time with Dr. Pham here on the podcast today, but just in all of my visits, very cordial, very willing to answer questions. So thank you very much for everything.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
So how would someone get a hold of you or your office if they were in this area or wanted to talk to you more?
So our office use a main contact number. The number is 281-495-2222. And all of my messages get to me, and I return my calls pretty in a timely fashion, I think. So
I always got a call back each time I called. So. All right. Well, that's going to be pretty much it. So if you want to check out our website, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, where you can watch live almost every Wednesday on our website. Again, this was a special Monday edition because it fit Dr. Pham's schedule better. You can join the conversation. Most of the time, you're going to find me on Twitter. Don't forget about looking at getting your free $50 from sportshealth.com/SMB. The December code is FOOBAG, FOOBAG. Again, sportshealth.com/SMB. I've had great success so far with them as well, ordering supplies and responsiveness. So again, sportshealth.com/SMB, where you can enter to win a $50 gift card each month. Again, FOOBAG is that there. So for Jeremy, the Sports Medicine One Kids, Dr. Yellen from the University of Houston, and Dr. Pham, that's a wrap.